Welcome to Trilawyer Talk. I'm Scott Klevsky, and I'm your host for this podcast where we speak with some of the best trial lawyers in the country. Today, I'm very happy to be sitting with my friend Debbie Taussig. Debbie's a great trial lawyer who practices in Boulder, Colorado, and she's going to share with us today a story relating to school bullying. So let's get started. I'm very pleased to be sitting with Debbie Taussig, who is a phenomenal trial lawyer in Colorado. Debbie is an excellent teacher, an excellent, caring, and loving human being, and I'm very glad to call you my friend.
Thank you, Scott. I'm glad to call you my friend, too.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a story of a case that's had a profound impact on you?
I have a case I'm working on right now that I'm very passionate about, and it's a new area of law for me, which I'm also excited about. And my client is 11, he's 12 now. When he was 11 years old, he moved to Colorado from Texas with his mom, and they came to Colorado for medical marijuana because his mom was an she had epilepsy, and so coming to Colorado was like a rebirthing of this family because she had epilepsy really bad and got multiple seizures per day, and they found that medical marijuana was the one thing that helped her, and so they had come to Colorado and started this new life. And they moved to this neighborhood that unfortunately is very poor, and the schools, I don't quite yet know exactly what all of the background of these schools are, but unfortunately there is a lot of bullying that goes on in this school. And my client happens to be white, and the school, most of the students in the school are Hispanic, and he's starts school there, and he starts getting bullied right away. And on top of that, he had this walking condition. I think it's called idiopathic toe walking, but it has something to do with the growth of the legs and how the tendons or the ligaments grow. But he had to walk funny, and he wore out his shoes, and so he was teased a lot and bullied, you know, physically and verbally bullied, and was called names that reflect his color of his skin. He was called white trash. And then he was teased about the way he walked. And eventually he got some walking casts on, so to correct this issue that he had. And so this bullying went on for all of his fifth grade. And then he started sixth grade. And he was about maybe 6 weeks into his sixth grade. And meanwhile, his parents had complained a lot. They'd shown up to the school. They tried to show up at the superintendent's office, but they had some policy where you had to fill out every complaint that you have online. And the parents didn't have a computer, and they had trouble doing the complaint on their phones. So my client was walking down the hall one day, and this kid that had been bullying him walked by him and had a pencil in his hand and stabbed my client in the chest. And he ended up having a punctured lung, but he didn't know it, the severity of his injuries. He was going to go to his class, actually, and a friend of his noticed that he didn't, something about him. The friend prompted him to go to the nurse's station. And so he goes to the nurse's office, and they tell him that he has to go back to the class and get this pass. And so he goes back and to the nurse's station, and they have this sign that says they're out to lunch. So he waits in the hallway for a while until finally somebody comes to his rescue and knocks on the nurse's door and, you know, insists that he gets attended to. And they just put a Band-Aid on it and called his mom. And so when his mom came, she realized something was serious and fortunately rushed him to the hospital. And physically, he's okay. He recovered. They fixed the punctured lung. And but he's got some pretty significant PTSD issues. And all of what I'm saying is actually now public record because I filed a complaint. So this is not anything that I'm saying that, you know, is not, you know, privileged or private information. And so he's being homeschooled and he's just been having significant PTSD issues. And I just think there's this systemic problem in some of these schools where they, you know, I'm just starting the case. I have gotten a little of information from some of the experts that I've talked to on school, but I think that they have problems. They're not dealing with this. So anyway, that's the case. One of the hurdles, at least in Colorado, and I believe that they have these similar hurdles in other states, is there's immunities that government entities have. And so the school districts have a lot of immunities, so you have some high hurdles in order to bring a lawsuit. And but we did able to bring the lawsuit so far under some of the federal statutes and the civil rights statutes. So some of the claims I've made are discrimination based on race and disability. And so I've actually filed the lawsuit. The government or the school districts filed a motion to dismiss, which they always do. And I've filed my response. And so we're in that process right now to see if we're going to get our day in court.
So how do you go about discovering the story of your case?
Well, with an 11-year-old boy, it's a little hard because the first time I went and met with the clients, you know, of course his parents were very forthcoming in telling me what happened, but he wouldn't even talk to me. And so I have spent a lot of time with him now. So I can't remember what order it did, but I've done a couple things. I had him go meet. Actually, I think first I had him meet with a local psychologist. I found this person who specializes in trauma for children, and he also specializes in a thing called EMDR, which is a treatment for trauma. But what I wanted to accomplish were two things. I wanted him to be evaluated as close to the event as possible, just to, you know, have someone understand and be able to testify about what happened. But I also asked the psychologist to interview my client and get as much information about what happened, because I didn't feel like it was appropriate for me to force him to tell me what had happened. So I had him first do that and got some information, and then of course that psychologist will be an expert. And but then what I did is some point after that, I had what we use at the Trilors College were introduced to psychodrama and the tools of using psychodrama to discover the story. And as lawyers, we can use some of those tools in our own practices and reenact events. But when you have a client who's been significantly traumatized, we don't do that ourselves. So I had one of our psychodramatists come to Colorado and work with him, and we reenacted the actual stabbing incident, and then we reenacted just some things, other things that were, you know, surrounded the part of discovering the story. And so it was pretty astounding and impactful that to just, you know, to see him tell us his story and to discover the story of what had happened.
How so?
Well, it's just like seeing something through a child's eyes, I think, is a little bit different in general, you know, in the innocent eyes of a child and what had happened. And I think when you discover the story, it's very spontaneous. So you pick up on things that you hadn't known about. But I think what the real beauty about psychodrama and reenacting is the story is it almost puts you there. You're part of the story.
So what did you learn through that that was impactful?
Well, I think one of the things I learned about my client has his mom is married not to his father, another man who has stepped into the role of his father, and he his mom had to I couldn't remember, but she couldn't be there that day, so his stepdad came. And so I did learn a lot of the dynamic of the family. And when my client, the boy, was reenacting this story, I noticed his stepdad was getting tears in his eyes by watching him go through this. It was very sad. And just to see my client lying, and when we reenacted it, he was lying in the hallway waiting for the nurse to come, kind of holding his chest because he instinctively knew something was wrong because he was having trouble breathing. And so whatever he was doing was probably perhaps saving his life because he was able to breathe. I guess it's just learning what had happened. So, and just the impact of him. He's just an innocent little kid, and he's really, the other thing is he's lonely because he's not in school. And at that age, 11 and 12 years old, he's missing out on an important part of just being around other kids. And to see, he kept talking about, I just want to go back to school because there's some of the people I still like. But, he's afraid to go back there, but he wants to, I don't know if he said he wanted to go back to school, but he said he just wished if he could just see some of the people that were nice to him again. And there were a couple teachers that he liked, and he wanted to show him his new shoes. I mean, that's how kids think,
Have you found a connection with you, Debbie Tosig, in your case?
I haven't thought of that. I do feel in a way that I've had times in my life where I felt lonely and sort of the underdog, and I don't remember specific instances of being bullied as a child, but I think that I can relate to that, the bullying part and just being ostracized. And I think even today in our practices, we're sort of ostracized and we're the underdog. So to represent the underdog and the ostracized is kind of fighting for them is a fulfilling. I don't even know if what the court's going to do with this case, but...
What brought you to represent this young boy?
It is just totally happenstance. He was referred to someone that I know, another lawyer who is a semi-retired lawyer that moved to Colorado, is living up in Aspen. And years ago, she had a case up there, and she had called my stepfather, Bill Trine, and it was a wrongful death baby case. The medical malpractice case. And so he had me work on that case, and so I got to know her, and occasionally she gets referrals and then refers them to me. And I would never thought of doing a school bullying case or anything like this.
So, Debbie, now that you've told us part of your client's story, tell us your story. Tell us who Debbie Tosig is, how you became you.
Well, I grew up in Boulder, Colorado, family of lawyers. Well, my father and my stepfather were lawyers. And for all of my childhood and the first part of my adulthood, going to law school didn't occur to me at all. I spent the first part of my career in retail. I had just totally different goals in mind, and ended up getting a decent, fun job for a while. I lived up in Vail, Colorado, and I did that for years. But I got bored with my life and bored living up there and wanted to do something more meaningful. And, it still didn't hit me like going to law school. And by then, my brother was a lawyer also, all doing plaintiffs, different variety of plaintiffs work. And I went to this speech by Ralph Nader, and he was talking about how Ralph Nader talks about all the consumer issues and the wrongs in our society and what we need to do to overcome them. And I remember he said something about, as a society and in this country, we have safer cars, we have safer products, we have safer toys. And he said something about it, but it's not because our lawmakers have gone out and decided that, you know, we need to make laws to protect the people. This is because we have trial lawyers who have brought these lawsuits against the auto manufacturers and the corporations and the government. And because of that, that's why we have so many safer products and cars and civil rights, obviously. It's because of lawsuits, not because of our... I mean, I know that we have great lawmakers, but, you know, just that was kind of his speech. And I think that was kind of what the first step in me thinking that I want... that, you know, perhaps this thing that's, like, right in front of me is maybe what I should do. And I really, literally, I lived in Vail at the time, and I had this... I owned a townhome up there, and I just thought, okay, I'll just... do all the steps, and if it falls into place, that's meant to be. So I went, ended up in law school, ended up passing. and then I was fortunate enough to go work for my stepfather, Bill Trine, who had a small law firm in Boulder, Colorado, and he practiced primarily medical malpractice. And that was very interesting and an awesome education. He just like threw me out to the wolves. Just right away, I was in the, you know, battlefields doing this type of work. Tried some cases right away with him and worked for him for 7 years. And then started my own practice with some partners for a while. Now I'm on my own. And that's kind of where I've ended up. But...
All right. In your bullying case... I want you to reverse roles with your client. What's your name?
Kyler.
How old are you, Kyler?
12.
What do you care about most in the world?
My dog, my mom, my dad.
What do you do for fun?
Well, I like to fish. And I like to play with my dog. I like to play with other kids.
And what are you most afraid of?
Being made fun of by other kids.
How does that make you feel?
Mad.
What happened to you?
I was made fun of and teased and kicked and bullied, and nobody came to my rescue for months and months and months.
Did you tell anybody about it?
Yeah.
Who'd you
tell? Some of the teachers and the principal and my parents and my friends. Sometimes I fought back.
How tall are you?
Maybe about 4 feet now, right now.
What do you like to watch on TV? What else do you like to do? What else do I like to do?
Just like to play with friends and my dog and watch TV.
I understand you're being homeschooled now.
Mm-hmm.
How does that feel?
I don't like school that much.
How come?
Just don't like it. I don't like homeschool.
What do you like?
Well, I wish I could be around some friends more and go on. But we're going on a road trip. We bought a camper and my parents are taking me on a trip. We're going to go visit my grandparents in California.
What do you like to eat?
Hamburgers, chicken nuggets, french fries.
Do you usually get the kids' meals in the restaurants?
Sometimes, but I can eat a lot.
Do you have any, you have a dog?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your dog.
Oh, I forget what time of time a dog it is. I don't want to get it wrong.
Yeah. So how do you feel about your lawyer, Debbie?
I like her. She's great. She's come down and seen me a lot, and she's really nice.
What do you guys do together?
Mostly just hang out, and she takes me out to lunch and talks. But she, you know, we laugh, and she has a nice dog, too.
And do you know what she's helping you with or what she's doing for you?
Yeah, she's trying to go after the school for me getting hurt.
How does that make you feel?
It's kind of scary because I don't really want to talk about what happened, but I think, you know, I feel like she's might help us.
If you could put your feelings about her in one word, what would they be?
Awesome.
And has Debbie met your mom?
Oh, yeah, lots. She's come to our house. We've met her places.
Okay. Now, Debbie, I want you to reverse back to being Debbie. Now I want you to reverse into your client's mom. What's her name?
Charisse.
Charisse, what do you look like?
Oh, I've got long, light brown hair. Got a big smile. Big eyes. Pretty cheerful looking most of the time, but I think, yeah, that's all.
So, what are three things you're most afraid of?
Seizures. My son getting hurt again. And just the everyday struggles. Getting ahead in life. We've struggled a lot.
So I imagine with your seizures, you must feel at times powerless.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, I can have them anytime. I mean, the marijuana has done wonders. I guess what I call it, it's cannabis. Usually I refer to it as cannabis, but it has been great. It's been the first time in a long time that I can get through a day without seizures.
So how does it make you feel as a mother, knowing you can have a seizure anytime?
Oh, well, I don't like them, but my son seeing that. And what I didn't like is that how he couldn't have a normal life before that with his mom constantly having seizures.
Has he seen you have seizures?
Oh, yeah.
So what is he seeing?
I just start shaking and, you know, kind of get out of control and lose consciousness and fall usually and... And I'm sure it's scary for my son to watch that.
And how does that make you feel?
Sad. So, but it's been better and we've had a lot of support in Colorado from other people.
So how do you feel as a mom knowing that you weren't there to protect your son when he was bullied?
I'm so mad at the school. I tried to get help.
So how do you feel about having to homeschool your son now?
Part of me is glad that I don't have to leave him at that school. I mean, I'm obviously glad that I don't have to leave him at that school anymore. But it's sad that he is not that he can't be out there with other kids. And it's a burden, about my son, but it's hard because we don't have money, and both my husband and I, we need to work to make ends meet, and I it's hard to work and be there with my son because we can't really leave him alone much.
How do you feel about this lawyer, Debbie, that took your case?
We love her.
Why?
Because she's so smart and she's championing for us, and she's there. She's done a lot for us.
And what is your hope for bringing this case?
Well, I hope that it doesn't happen to anybody else. I want the schools to do something about this and hope that we can make a better life for my son and do better for him and get him some help and just get into a place where we can send him to a school that's safe.
What else do we need to know about you?
Just I love my son, love my husband. My family means everything to me.
Okay, now, Debbie, I want you to reverse back and become Debbie. How did that feel?
It was a nice reversing roles with them. You know, I feel like I do know them, but there's things I don't know.
Yeah, do you felt like you were in a role, were true to who they are?
Yeah.
And does that help you feel connected to your client?
Yeah.
And how might that be helpful in trying this case?
Well, it's definitely helpful in being able to tell this story and relate and in a relatable way. But I think that if I'm not feeling the emotional impact of my story, I'm not going to teach it in a way to the jury that they're going to be emotionally impacted by it. And that's one of the things we learned at the Trial Lawyers College is that the emotional content of the story is what makes jurors connect. I mean, I don't know if we can go so far as, obviously we want to say if we emotionally get them involved, they're going to give us a verdict for us. But it's certainly, I feel like it's the way that they connect to us and connect to our clients and connect to the story.
How do you deal with the feelings of stress and anxiety and struggle and often feeling powerless as a trial lawyer?
Well, reaching out to other lawyers and people, my friends who can relate is obviously helpful. And knowing that I'm not totally alone in what I'm doing, that others are, in the same struggle. And that's whether they're in my community or through the larger Trial Lawyers College Network or other plaintiffs' trial lawyers organizations. And then, I have a great supportive husband who is always there for me. I don't know how he does it, but he's solid and there for me always. And then I think that what I do You know, the healthy ways I do it are, you know, to do some yoga and meditation and some breathing and some journaling. And I mean, I do that to reduce the stress of my job or go on a walk. You know, sometimes I go home and us trial lawyers, there's a high incident of alcoholism. And sometimes there is that inclination to drink. And I used to do that more, but I don't do that now. I mean, I don't drink to what I call to relieve stress or self-medicate. I try something else.
Yeah, in fact, I mean, there's very few people in our profession who never do at some point in their career try alcohol or drugs or some other, let's just say, not constructive way to deal with the stress. And it sounds like you have some great, great tools in yoga, in meditation, in nature.
We need that. I mean, it's okay. I don't mind, you know, having a glass of wine or for fun is one thing, but yeah, I think that's what I think that we need to find other ways to relieve the stress, not just to avoid becoming an alcoholic, but just because that's it's just more organic. I mean, I think that it's the way that we can deal with life in general too.
What advice do you have for young trial lawyers out there who are looking to learn and grow?
Well, you got to take risks, and you got to just go out and do it. And there's so many things that are going to be thrown at you, and so much adversarial, the process is just so adversarial, and to not take it personally. And not buy into the, you know, not get baited into a war with your opposing counsel over something. Always take the high road. But I also think just you got to have some passion about your cases. You got to love your clients. I mean, I guess there's cases where you don't always love your clients, but you got to at least find some passion in what you're doing. I personally would have a hard time representing somebody that I couldn't want to be around for very long, and I generally grow very fond of my clients. But and then I guess lastly, most of us who do this type of work are very giving people, and I think that we'd always help somebody. So I think ask somebody, look, find not just one person, but people that you like what they do, that you admire, and reach out and get some mentors.
Debbie, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a real pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you for joining us today for Trial Lawyer Talk. If you like the show, I'd really appreciate it if you could give us a good review on iTunes, and I'd love to get your feedback. You can reach me at www.scottglovsky.com. That's scottglovsky.com. And I'd love to hear your feedback. You can also check out the book that I published called Fighting Health Insurance Denials, A Primer for Lawyers. That's on Amazon. I put the book together based on 20 years of suing health insurance companies for denying medical care to people, and it provides a general outline of how to fight health insurance denials. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you in the next episode.